investigation is ongoing, guys. So 12 arrests have been made. One of those arrested has been released without charge. But police are increasingly confident that the three perpetrators are those, of course, that ran into crowds on London Bridge and then went on a stabbing spree, killing seven and injuring 48. Police increasingly confident that those three men were the only perpetrators in this attack.
It is an ideology that is a perversion of Islam and a perversion of the truth. Defeating this ideology is one of the great challenges of our time. It will only be defeated when we turn people's minds away from this violence and make them understand that our values, pluralistic British values, are superior to anything offered by the preachers and supporters of hate.
This is a crisis like no other in the history of the Gulf Cooperation Council. Again, just to give you a sense of how drastic some of these measures are, it's not just cutting links in terms of land and sea and air, it's also disallowing some of the citizens in terms of living here. So Qataris have to leave the United Arab Emirates within 14 days, and residents in the United Arab Emirates, they're not allowed to travel to Qatar anymore. So can you imagine what this does to some of the families here, let alone the business links, and ultimately the wider growth story as well?
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's June 5th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you here for another Opening Bell. The program is a Monday edition of the show, and it's also the start of the work week. So we've got two things to get over today. Glad to have you here, regardless of whether you're joining us for a Monday or whether it's your Tuesday or whatever. Lots to cover this morning. And on the business scene, you heard there in the opening montage, the situation in the Arab Emirates, United Arab Emirates, seems to be reaching a crisis level. Saudi Arabian Airlines says it is now suspending flights to Qatar, joining other airlines, stopping service amid a growing diplomatic rift. The country has been sort of sidelined by other neighboring countries, including Saudi Arabia. The diplomatic relations have been cut between the two countries. Also, in there, some other countries as well. We'll be monitoring this throughout the morning and its impact on the markets as well. The airline, Saudi airline, posted on Twitter this morning that's halting flights pretty much immediately. 14 days is how long people from Qatar have to leave. Some of the other countries that have suspended diplomatic ties have cut diplomatic ties with that country today. Let's see how this is affecting the markets this morning on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses later this morning, off 7 points now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Crude oil's up just about a third at 47.81 a barrel. In Europe this morning, after yet another terrorist attack over the weekend in London, the FTSE is off just about a quarter this morning. The DAX is a little bit higher in Germany. In France, the CAC is lower. All of the rest of the indices are lower in Europe this morning. Asian markets generally lower as well, with the Nikkei off just a fraction. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai also off just about a quarter to a half this morning. Back in this country, gold and silver futures are trading a little bit higher this morning. A couple of other stories we're watching for you as we begin this day. The World Bank says the world economy will pick up speed this year and next, helped along by steadier commodity prices and a pickup in global trade. The Anti-Poverty Agency predicts 2.7% growth this year and 2.9% growth in 2018, improving on 2016's 2.4% expansion. The bank sees U.S. economy growing just 2.1% this year, up from 1.6% in 2016. The U.S. Energy Secretary has reassured Japan that this country is committed to tackling environmental issues and promoting clean energy, even though the country has left the Paris Accord. Japanese officials met with the Energy Secretary Rick Perry. He told his Japanese counterparts that the U.S. commitment to the environment is unchanged. Time for a CEO spotlight on this Monday. Dollop Coffee Company has 10 shops across Chicago. Soon it will be opening its first diner in the Andersonville neighborhood. It is an exciting expansion for the company, which is run, owned by Dan Weiss. He is the owner. Not only that, he's a rap artist, believe it or not. Verbal Kent is one of his monikers. It's a pretty exciting time for Dollop Coffee. We thought he would put him in the CEO spotlight this morning. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. I'm a big coffee fan, a big Dollop fan as well. We thought we'd have you in today because there's a lot of seems news about coffee happening these days. We'll get into some of that in a little bit. But I have to say, one of the best things I read about you, one of the best stories, described you as surviving on music and coffee. And I know a lot of people that do that. Tell us about your journey and how you ended up at this point.
Yeah, for sure. So in the late 90s and the early 2000s, I basically sat in coffee shops and wrote music. And, you know, I was kind of a bum in a good way. And, you know, I was one of those guys you would see playing chess and smoking cigarettes and you know, kind of writing and being a weirdo, mumbling to himself. And I fell in love with what the coffee shop was. And back then, it wasn't the coffee shops weren't businesses as much as they were these rooms where people came to and spent $2 and hung out for 5 hours, you know, and got a refill or whatever, had a bottomless cup. And so, you know, the industry was developing and I had absolutely no idea what would come for me in the future in terms of me being in this business. So, I was a musician. I would tour. I would, you know, do some. I still make hip hop music. And so I would tour and do some, you know, do stuff in the States, stuff in Europe. But mostly, I utilized the coffee shop for that was kind of my office. And so anyway, yeah. And here we are years later.
And you sort of had an up and down sort of journey, didn't you? You kind of went to music, then to coffee, then back to music, and then back to coffee. Is that a fair way to describe the timeline?
Yeah, sort of. A friend had brought me into coffee to help him out, and I learned a lot from that experience and kind of, you know, it ended up being a little bit not exactly the right fit and the right, you know, for me at the time. So I did go in and out, but once I got back in after that experience, from that point on, you know, it was all coffee, all in.
And so now here we are, flash forward to 2017. Dollop is doing really well. Tell us about your success, how many stores you got going, that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. So right now we have 9 locations. We have 3 more planned for this year though. So we have the Dollop Diner is opening in Andersonville, which is going to be fun. So it'll be our first project where we'll do draft cocktails. So we'll have a liquor program too. And an actual food menu. And then we're doing a South Loop location and a River North location this year, too. So, yeah, it's going really great, man. I mean, it's a good time to be in coffee, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, I saw on your Twitter feed you have the bacon emoji and the coffee emoji next to it. I'm guessing you're going to have bacon and breakfast food?
Yeah, the diner is going to have, it'll be my friend Keith Cruiser, who's a chef and a beverage director and kind of a hospitality guy, is running the show there. And it'll be a full, you know, it'll be a full menu. It's not going to be a giant restaurant, but it'll be the kind of thing where we'll do chicken and waffles and breakfast sandwiches and really good salads and stuff. And then you can sit around at night and drink.
Oh, that's kind cool. Of thing. What's so, the, yeah. The timeline on that is by this month. This month, wow.
Yeah, this month or early June at the worst.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that coffee shops were this place where people seem to, like a neighborhood gathering place, people seem to go and hang out there. Are they still that today? How much of it is just the ambiance versus
right.
The coffee?
It's shifted. So back when I used to sit around in the shops, it didn't really matter what the quality of the coffee was and what the end result was. People weren't really doing latte art. It wasn't, you know, it was different. It was less of an accessory and more of a utility. Like, people would sit in these places and use it. And that shifted. I think companies like Intelligentsia and Stumptown and the kind of the third wave coffee companies that came in, it shifted the focus from the neighborhood meeting place into like the actual product. Like, what are you getting here? The attention changed, and now it's what's kind of cool for me is because I came from the background of using the shops as a living room, and now with coffee having the ability to make coffee such a high end product, you can do both. So like my goal, for example, with Dollop is I want it to be a place where you're comfortable, you get it, you walk in and you feel like you're in the right place and you're welcome and you can sit or you can get an incredible cup of coffee and get out and get to work. That's kind of the thing. Like, that's where I would have tried to go for with Dollop. That's kind of what it is.
You mentioned the latte art. Some of this stuff is, you almost feel bad just drinking it.
yeah, like you're going to ruin it.
Yeah, you're going to ruin it. Like, it's a piece of art.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, talk to us a little bit about how you find quality coffee. I mean, how do you develop a taste for that? And Where do you find it?
Sure. So we use Metropolis, which is locally roasted. It's Tony and Jeff are the owners. It's father and son, and they're great people. You know, I trust them to. They're the guys that are sourcing coffee. They're going to Ethiopia. They're finding coffee, and they're pros at this, right? So, you know, my focus has been to this point has been the retail, the environment, and the presentation, and the identity, and building this brand. So, you can, you know, as a lot of people are coffee shops are exploding right now, and you can there's a lot of roasters you can go through. Locally, I think Metropolis is on top. In my opinion, they're on top. Their dedication to the art and to the craft and to kind of keep they push quality. I've never seen a company like this. They get every year their coffee is somehow better, which is incredible.
The other part of this, you mentioned that you know, it's all about the coffee now, the taste of it, the quality of it. But equal is that I'm surprised is the sourcing of it. Mm. People want to know, do they come up and want to know where their coffee comes from, who grows it, is it done responsibly, that sort of thing?
They do. The emphasis on origin and notes in coffee is something that if you as the barista, if you're working in a coffee shop and if you're trained properly and you have the information available, people – Then you can spit it back at people when they ask. We don't, for example, a dollop. You don't come in and get a spiel. You don't get like, oh, would you like the fresh roasted, Ethiopia blend from? We don't push it on you. Mm-hmm. We have information available, and our baristas are trained to. If you were to come in and you were to ask a hyper specific question about coffee, we could talk the talk with you. But we don't want the environment where we're putting that on you. So does that make sense?
It does. And the thing that's cool about Dollop is you actually one of your stores is a training facility. There's mm-hmm. there's actually a training regimen that your baristas go through, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you have one or two shops, your manager kind of trains you. You know, you go to Metropolis and they train you, and you bring back the culture from that. So at this point, you know, we have 100 employees, so we need a home base. And as we grow, hopefully we'll have an isolated, independent training facility. But for now, we do it at 55 West Monroe, which is a fun environment because it's super busy. And so you're training, and all of a sudden you're kind of in the mix. You know, you get these rushes at 8 in the morning, and you're training, which is interesting. And so there are downtimes to focus and to dial in and stuff like that. But we wanted to do it in a busy environment because mm-hmm. then when you go back to your neighborhood shop, you're good. You know, after going through the Monroe, the busy downtown environment, you're ready to go.
Is there a textbook? I mean, what does the training entail?
So we have a manual. I mean, but at the same time, so Jim Rudd is our trainer, and he has built up a program. And, you know, if you come from, let's say you worked at an Intelligentsia or another specialty coffee shop and you come to Dollop, you're going to still learn it our way. I mean, if you have great knowledge and deep knowledge of coffee, you're going to train for a week and you're probably good to go. But what the point of training for us not only is education, it's also consistency. So the first dollop, for example, I purchased the business in 2010. And one of the main things that was wrong was you never knew what you were going to get when you walked into that place. And I was a customer at the time. Hmm. And you'd walk in there and it would just be, I would literally have to look behind the counter and see who was working. And that would base my drink. So if Josh was working, I'll take a vanilla latte. Josh is working. But if Bob was working, I'll just take a drip coffee, that kind of a thing. So the main goal of us pushing our training program is I want consistency across the board.
Yeah. And two with that, is it as much as it is the coffee, the where it comes from, it's how it's made too, right? I mean, does a consumer go into a shop, either yours or somebody else, and look at the equipment and say, okay, this is going to be a really cool cup of coffee?
More and more they do. So we use a technology called Modbar, and what the difference is, essentially it provides a theatric element to coffee. So if you look at a Starbucks, there's nothing wrong with this, and there are great, beautiful machines that are countertop machines. The issue with that is these espresso machines is they're basically blocking the performance. And so you train, you spend all this time training, and you can pour this beautiful cup of coffee, but there's a big block in front of you, and you give someone a drink. So with Modbar, for example, one of the things we use it about half our shops now. You can, if you're standing in front of me, you can see everything that's happening from the extraction coming out of the machine to the milk being steamed to the pour to the handoff, right? And we're on this level playing field, customer and barista. And again, that could be overlooked completely and ignored, or it starts a dialogue and then gets, and then maybe in 2-3 weeks after experiencing that, you're a coffee fanatic all of a sudden. It went from being, this is just a thing I do every day for whatever reason, to this is fascinating. It's a culture, you know?
Yeah. And picking up on that culture, you know, Starbucks has made their baristas, this is a professional position now.
Mm-hmm.
They want to keep them. They're sending them to college. It never used to be that, though, right?
Well, I mean, when it was mom and pop,
sure.
I mean, I think it was probably more of just a casual job. At this point, you can, you know, I'm meeting incredible people that are coming through the door mm-hmm. to want to work at Dollop who they're making a solid living in from a standpoint of A, if you're a student or if you're younger and you need something to supplement your income. We have a lot of artists that work for us, a lot of people like that. But also there are people who – I mean you actually can – you can get by – and do pretty well being a barista. I mean, and we're offering health insurance. We're trying to. I want the company to be a company that I'm proud of. So, I think that Starbucks has done a really good job of setting the bar for that. To be honest, I mean, you can make a living and work at Starbucks and be happy and healthy. And I think they've set a good precedent for that.
I'll mention Starbucks one more time.
You can mention it all day.
Just because they're putting in this thing down on Michigan Avenue. They're taking over the Crate and Barrel space
mm-hmm.
with what's going to be a three-story coffee place. Does that say anything about this town as a coffee town?
Well, I think Starbucks, I think this was their first, I think they're after.
Outside of Seattle.
Yeah, I think this mm-hmm. was the place they kind of blew up.
Right.
So it may be an homage. It may be that's why they're doing it. I think it's fairly excessive, and it's obviously a giant branding tool, and more power to them. I mean, it's incredible to be able to do that, and it just shows you what they're capable of, I guess. You know, Starbucks is – they're watching companies – and it's not even about Dollop, but they're watching companies like Dollop all around the country and the world kind of put more focus on design and quality and they're doing whatever they can do. I don't know if they want to say they're scrambling, but they're doing whatever they need to do right now to essentially compete or to make sure that they, or more importantly, to maintain their market share, right? So it's funny to watch. I mean, who am I, right? At 9-10 shops in Chicago, but you can see it happen. Their reserve, what they're doing with their reserve, mm-hmm. they want to ensure that people pay attention to them. And I don't know if they're nervous, but from a standpoint, it's smart. What they're doing is actually really smart to create a higher end line and to put more focus on design. That's where the industry's going. You know,
speaking of trajectory, where do you see Dollop going in the next year, next 2 years? You've sort of laid out the case for the rest of this year and next, but what about 5 years from now?
It's been really, really organic and fun and natural, right? Everything that's happened with Dollop and. Nothing's been forced. This was not a business that started because I wanted to start a business. This was a passion project. And obviously, it's serious now, though, right? There's 100 employees. There's, you know, 9, 10 shops. We're going to have 13, 14. Let's say we have 15 shops in the next 6 months. You know, is roasting in our future? You know, we bake ourselves now. This is it's starting to be a thing. If Dollop Diner opens, and just to be frank, let's say it opens and it's just a smash. Why wouldn't I open more Dollop Diners?
Sure.
I mean, we're in a great city for diners. There's no, you know, late night food. So I know that might be a little bit of a scrambled answer, but for Dollop right now, it's just about paying attention to what is happening, to what's in front of me, and focusing on what we're doing right. And let's push it and let's keep going with it and until it doesn't feel right. And that's kind of where I'm at. So we're certainly looking to grow naturally, though, as opposed to any. The business plan side of things is important and valuable, but this is my life. It's different.
Yeah, and there are lots of corners in lots of places in the city that would yell out for a coffee shop.
There are, but how far do you go before you're looked at as just grabbing every possible opportunity? So it has to be natural. This is not a model where you say I'm opening in every neighborhood in Chicago. Yeah, I've heard people say that before, and it doesn't work like that. So where there's a fit, you open, and that I think you keep going with that logic, and then you kind of find. I'm hoping I find my place.
You said you still with hip hop. You still do mm-hmm. some of that stuff. Do you ever do that in your stores? Do you ever perform in your shops?
No, I keep those lives pretty separate. Yeah, it's pretty separate. I mean, it's music for me is, it's like my number one hobby at this point. I mean, I still do it. I still write all the time and record. I'm more of a recording artist than I am anything else. I can't really travel that much, and I have two kids. But I love doing it, but there are still employees that probably don't even, probably this will be the first time they even hear that I do that. I kind of keep it, you know, it's my secret life.
What advice would you give folks if they're the coffee aficionados at home to make a really good cup of coffee? Probably some of them listening right now getting ready for work.
Well, I mean, so at home I use, I do a Chemex at home for two, because me and my wife split it and we grind our own beans. So if, you know, if you have the time, if you have 5-10 minutes, I would grind your own beans and, you know, weigh the beans, grind them, and make single cup of single cups at a time rather than brewing a giant pot. Or pre-setting your Dunkin' Donuts the night before, like my wife's parents do. You can do that, you know, and it's fine. And that's the thing, though. It's not. It's an experience. You can do whatever you want, and if you're happy drinking coffee, you're happy. I've never been the kind of person to tell anybody how to drink coffee. You know.
Yeah. And if you really want a good cup of coffee, just come into a dollop. Too.
That's also the easiest way of saying it.
Dan, it's good to meet you, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Dan Weiss is the owner and CEO of Dollop Coffee Company in Chicago. We're going to continue our conversation with Dan after the bell and post more of our interview with the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning at WGNradio.com. By the way, you can follow Dollop Coffee online and on Twitter. On Twitter at Dollop Coffee Co. C-O, and online at DollopCoffee.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40, and Bank of America Merrill Lynch has put out its annual workplace benefits report. It talks to employers and employees about how they feel about retirement and their financial readiness, their current financial state as well. We're happy to have with us Jordan Glebe this morning. He's the Managing Director of Wealth Management, Management Advisor at Merrill Lynch Bank of America. And Jordan, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us this morning. This report, first, if we could maybe talk about why you guys do it every year.
Well, we know that there's a lot of stress in the work environment for younger individuals out there. You know, the millennials, which is one of the largest groups to come through the workforce right now, is going through different changes than some of us that are a little bit older than them. And employers really need help in trying to figure out how to help their employees work through these times.
This report gives us a snapshot of how both of those might be impacted. Let's start first from the employee side of things. What is the headline in terms of the findings from the report?
Well, we do know that millennials versus Generation Xers and baby boomers, they're optimistic about their financial future. But we do know that when at work, you know, millennials spend about 4 hours every week pondering over their finances, while Generation Xers spend 2 hours versus baby boomers 1 hour.
And is that because of their overall concern, or are they trying to educate themselves? What are they doing with that time?
Well, what they're really trying to do is it's the stress that wears on them. For example, millennials come out of school with a much higher debt level because of the cost of school. They tend to be staying at home longer. They tend to get more help from their parents. They do want to move out. And during this process, they're trying to figure out how to save at the same time. And then employers obviously play a very large role in that, depending on their plan designs.
64% generally of the employees surveyed in this report are worried about running out of money in retirement. Boy, that's something that I know keeps a lot of our listeners awake every night. How do we bring that number down? What is the answer in terms of solving this?
So two things. From an employer level, it's all about plan design, right? Getting people in younger into a plan, starting at an appropriate savings rate at a higher level at an earlier age. That's one of the ways that the employer could help. But this financial wellness word that's going around the industry right now, there are some that use it, there's some that actually do it. And what's really important is for the employer to engage and find ways like a roadmap. Before we had GPS, we had maps. Well, people need financial roadmaps, and they need to follow them. And younger people like to know that things are going to be okay, and if they do these series of steps and have regular check-in points, they could do that. Today, a lot of these plan designs have wellness programs embedded into their 401ks, which will basically, we check in and say, if someone hasn't actually hit this button for wellness and asked for a roadmap, that's one of the points that deteriorates whether or not they'll have a high success rate in retirement.
So what is the people doing wrong about this? You mentioned this roadmap, but is there something concrete here that has to change? Is it what? I mean, how do you improve that wellness and make it real?
Well, first they need to have regular meetings with somebody. They need to sit and review their plan and understand their baseline where they're actually at. And then from there, they need to take the correct steps to either improve upon that or to correct some of the things that they're doing. You know, for example, you know, moving out of the house is a big thing for young people, right? So maybe they don't understand the impact of building up a budget and having a budget for 6 months to a year out there. In some cases, they don't understand the impact and how detrimental it could be if they were to lose their job after they bought a place. Okay, it's just simple things like that, and having that financial plan built in, and to have more of a cushion for a downturn out there. Because many of them are living for the moment instead of the future, and that roadmap will help them get through that.
Jordan, you mentioned something earlier about the millennials especially that are concerned about their finances and their financial future, this student loan issue. Have we really seen the true nature of that in terms of its impact on people and their finances and also the economy?
I don't believe we've seen it yet. I believe currently what's happening is people are actually not really becoming the adults as boomers have known them. I'm a boomer, so when I was growing up, 22 was an appropriate age when you no longer counted on your parents and you weren't living at home. Today, that number starts to go into the 30s. So the concern there is how do people deal with this and when is this impact happening? And as people are just coming out of school, because millennials are between 22 and 39 years of age, they're starting their families later. They're moving through that. I really believe the effects that we need to change some things in the system. And I'll give you an example. Today, other than just planning, if you couldn't afford to put money in the plan because you're paying off your debt, I believe the system has to be able to track things a little bit better. Now, this doesn't exist today, but imagine that if you got credit for paying your loan as if the money went in the plan and got the match anyways, you'd be working both sides of the balance sheet. There are very creative solutions that can be done to help solve this today that may not exist in the marketplace, but I think as time goes on, we'll be developing some of these things. And there are very creative ways for millennials to work through this. It's about all having a plan and following that plan with an advisor or somebody that you trust. And today, I think too many people go it alone.
Yeah. Jordan, we're talking again about the workplace benefit report here. One of the other things that jumped out at me was the number of women who are specifically concerned or especially concerned about their health, financial health. Why is this number of women so high in terms of concern?
Well, you know, one of the things that happens when you in a family is that if there's a caretaker in a family, it tends to be the women that drop out of the workforce to do that. Okay. So they're helping at home, the family, they're not working as long. And they tend to, they don't have as much in savings as the men do. And that's one of their bigger concerns out there.
Generally going forward though, the report card is good. What would be the first step if somebody's listening who's in one of these groups that has concerns? Where's the best place for them to go and find information?
So at their respective providers, there's always great help for whoever's holding the assets. Okay, so the number one thing are their health plans and then their 401k plans. Whoever's holding that 401k plan tends to have great education there. You should be able to sit with somebody or talk to somebody on the phone. But more importantly, the number one thing is getting in the plan early and escalating, moving that balance up over time, the savings rate. But it's also working efficiently with your money. For example, you might have health savings plans, understanding how to put that money in there, maybe stopping at the match, going into your health savings plan, because that's where your money is most efficiently used. It's basically just a roadmap. And unfortunately, every single individual is unique and specific, so they need to look at their baseline where they're at and work with somebody to figure out what's in their best interests.
Yeah, and whatever you do, don't sit and wring your hands and worry. Jordan, thank you for joining us this morning and sharing the information from this benefits report.
Thank you.
Jordan Gleb is a managing director at Wealth Management, a wealth management advisor, a retirement benefits consultant at Merrill Lynch Bank of America. It's their annual workplace benefit report. We'll link out the details of this to you on Twitter and on our Opening Bell page.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow Futures looking toward a negative open on Wall Street later this morning off 11 now. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, the grain trade will be watching the weather situation, particularly in North Dakota. Far and away, the largest producer of spring wheat. And last week on Friday, we ended the week with the spring wheat contract at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange going up a nickel at 583 and three quarters on the close. And it did trade as high as $5.90. Concern is dry weather in the state of North Dakota and surrounding areas. And so we'll be keeping an eye on that this week. Chicago wheat was pretty much unchanged for the July contract, 429.5 Friday. July corn up a penny and a half for the day at 372 and three quarters. And July soybeans gained 11 and a quarter cents last Friday to close at 921 and a quarter. Now, livestock traders will be watching the cattle market. Can the market continue to show the strength that it has, the recovery over the past month or so? And today, our live cattle trading limit will be $3 per hundredweight. And after failing to settle up down 450, there will not be an expanded limit on the feeder cattle contracts. But again, the market in the cattle trade doing pretty well last week. Well, focused besides June Dairy Month, and I certainly miss being with everybody at Harvard Milk Days on Saturday. But this week, we turn our attention to the pork industry. World Pork Expo in Iowa State Fairgrounds in Des Moines on June 7, 8, and 9. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. And on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook on this Monday, it is June 5th, 2017, and the Labor Department will release first quarter productivity data today. The Institute for Supply Management has its latest service sector index for May. Also today, the Commerce Department is out with a report on factory orders in April. All of those reports, either one of them, any one of them, could move the markets. It is World Environment Day, established by the United Nations General Assembly in 1972. And today, Apple will show off its latest software and hardware, including Macs and iPads, at its annual conference for developers. The most anticipated item expected to be the voice-controlled speaker that would compete with the Amazon Echo and the Google Home devices. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, June 5th, 2017.